Gang, for over a year now, I've been talking about True Hemp Science Full Spectrum CBD oils and how they've reduced my anxiety and helped me get better sleep without waking up feeling foggy and confused. I've also talked about the Full Spectrum CBD balms that relieved my hand pain last year and made playing piano and guitar much easier. Well, gang, today I'm going to tell you about True Hemp Science organic gummies made with Full Spectrum hemp oil that are available now. They come in two different gauges. There are 50 milligram ones that have 50 milligrams of CBD and 1.5 milligrams of THC. Then there are ones that are 100 milligrams of CBD and 5 milligrams of THC. Absolutely delicious lemon lime slash orange flavors and also watermelon black cherry flavors. Super, super delicious. Now, they also have a complete line of full spectrum CBD products, including oils, tinctures, skincare lotions, sports rubs, chocolates, gummies, all kinds of stuff. Well, gang, How Did I Get Here has teamed up with True Hemp Science to bring you a very special offer that benefits all of us. Spend $100 or more at truehempscience.com and you will get a free gift. Just enter the code HDIGH at checkout. There's a little code place there for you to enter it, HDIGH, and you will get a free gift with purchase. That's right. Go to truehempscience.com and balance your body and mind with True Hemp Science. Let's get down. Hey, gang, I want to thank you for listening to this episode of How Did I Get Here? I know you have a lot of choices out there, and the fact that you're listening to this episode right now is not lost on me, so thank you. I'm not sure what platform you're listening on, but whatever platform you're on, give us a follow. And if you like what you hear, leave us a rating. It takes just a second, and it means the world to me. Plus, it really helps the show. So thank you in advance. And remember, the last 100 episodes of How Did I Get Here are available on all streaming services. Now, enjoy the show. Welcome to the second Magnet Classics podcast and How Did I Get Here collaboration. I'm Johnny Gowdy, host of How Did I Get Here. Today, my co-host Hobart Rowland from Magnet Classics Podcast and I will be talking to Miles Zuniga and Tony Scalzo from Austin Grammy-nominated platinum-selling power pop band Fastball about their upcoming album Sonic Ranch out this June on Sunset Boulevard Records. This year, Fastball also celebrates their 30th anniversary, and Hobart and I have a great conversation with Miles and Tony about recording Sonic Ranch at the studio Sonic Ranch in Far West Texas with producer David Garza. We talk about working together for 30 years, songwriting, touring, all the pain money can buy in the way, topping the charts in the 90s, being able to stay engaged and making new music in this day and age, and much, much more. I had the pleasure of playing with Fastball for some shows this last summer, and I had a blast, and I actually got to experience the power that they have as a band and how much people love them to this day, like firsthand and in person. And it was an amazing experience. We talk about that as well. It's a great conversation with old friends. This is also the second collaboration with my old friend Hobart Rowland and Magnet Classics Podcast. And I'm glad that we get to do this stuff. And I'm looking forward to someday doing more. Also, one quick note, this album was originally called Desert Songs, and it was called Desert Songs when we actually had this conversation with Miles and Tony. The name has since changed to Sonic Ranch. So every time we say Desert Songs in this conversation, we meet Sonic Ranch. The first single from Sonic Ranch, Rather Be Me Than You, is available now wherever it is you stream your music. You'll also hear it in just a second when I stop talking. So without further ado, this is me, Johnny Gowdy, and Hobart Rowland, talking to Fastball. The record's called Desert Songs, and I noticed a few weeks ago or a month ago or something like that, you guys posted a post asking people to submit names. Yeah. Is this a name someone submitted? No. Okay.
No. It went round and round and round and round. I mean, we just wanted to call the record Fastball, actually, is what we wanted to call it. But it turns out that there's logistical things, like if you're trying to, it's so boring, but if you're trying to track album airplay or how something's doing, Fastball makes it very hard. There's all this baseball crap. It just makes it harder to measure what you're doing,
right?
You're doing.
I understand. Yeah.
And so it makes their job harder. It's nothing we would ever think about.
They're still not settled.
Because we have a record company, so.
Right. That's Sunset Boulevard
Records.
Yeah,
we never had a record company in the past. Like, God, it's been forever. But so we would just put the records out.
Right.
And which we just put them out and not really promote them or anything. They're just out there in the world.
Right.
So this time.
This time you've got.
We got a publicist. We have an infrastructure that's helping us promote this record. So we'll see how they do.
That's great.
We'll see how they do versus us just pushing send.
Is this your label or our label that signed
it?
Tell us a little bit about the label.
I'll tell you about them. They're called Sunset Boulevard.
Uh huh.
And that was a red flag for me right away. So we are, you know, we're you and I and he are, we're all the same age. I don't know about Johnny. Johnny's a little younger. Anyway.
So young.
But they are mainly a guy who has a ton of great catalog tapes. He's gotten tons of live recordings, super classic artists, all the way back to like Ella Fitzgerald. And so lots of genres. But he's recently started putting out new music and likes to work on like 90s stuff right now, apparently, because he put out a live album with Everclear. And then we put out a live
and
album last year.
Dandy Warhols.
I saw that they have a new album coming out.
And he's just, one of the guys sent me a tape of the Butthole Surfers playing, and they needed to get it burned so they could digitize it. And they're going to put that out. So there's like it might be 91. It might be 80s too. It might be 87 Butthole Surfers Live. So they're putting that out. And we're putting out a studio album, which is the one we're talking about today.
Yeah. So, and they put out the live album that you guys put out at the end of last year.
Yeah. We recorded
Smashed
that
hits.
Last year at
South by. Uh-huh. Yeah. I went and listened to that yesterday. It's funny because some of these songs, for those people listening, I probably said it in the intro, but I played with you guys last year.
Right.
And so I had almost all of the songs except like four of them.
Probably, yeah.
And you guys were playing them. It's interesting to, it sounds like a couple of them, were they remixed since last year?
Or probably.
Yeah?
I can't remember.
Actually, we just didn't give you all of it because we weren't playing them.
Yeah,
right.
Some of it was remixed because
some of it sounds different.
Because John Fields, we got involved with him.
Yeah, but he had already completed his mix by the time he was.
Yeah, I don't remember the time.
Hmm. Well, a couple of them sound a little bit different. Like they sound that they have a couple different things in them. But
well, there you have it.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, back to this record, I'm guessing the Desert Songs, is that kind of in reference to Sonic Ranch and the crazy environment? Every band I ever talked to that's ever recorded there says that place has just an amazing kind of aura to it.
Well, it's got three or four, I don't know, beautiful studios.
Yeah, yeah.
Each room is great to work in. And they have gear for days. They have all kinds of guitars, all kinds of stuff laying around to use, so you don't really need to bring anything with you. And the most attractive thing for me is that everyone sleeps there and stays there, so there's no distractions. Like ordinary life doesn't interfere. You're just there to create, and they have a staff that cooks, so they have awesome breakfast and awesome lunch, and then they make dinner during the day, and the women that cook all leave at about 2 or 3, but they got dinner covered for you, and then
like a buffet style,
so you don't have to worry about anything really. You're just there to create, and there's nowhere to go, and there's nothing to do, and that's good.
Yeah,
if you're trying to get something done.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
and I believe that studio is one aspect, and the other is David Garza.
Yeah,
David is more at home than I think anybody who makes records there.
Yeah,
yeah. A lot of other producers come in and work there and like it a lot, but David knows it like inside out, and he knows what's there and where it is, and if he doesn't, he'll find it, you know, somewhere in the property.
Yeah, that's the funny part, is the treasure hunt for, like, he's like, there's a beautiful
12 string
somewhere.
Yeah.
And then you have to go see who's got it, where it is, someone's using it or not, and you just, you know, that kind of thing.
You guys had not worked with David before, right?
Well, no. we had, this session took a while, so it's cut up in two different sessions, and one was in May of 2022.
Okay.
And then we went back in February of 2023.
But we never worked with him. We've been friends with him a long time.
And we didn't know how it was going to be until he started working. And
we did a tour with him back in, like,
when he had a deal.
He opened for us in 1998. He had
dreadlocked white girls.
He had Chepo. He had Chepo in the band.
Yeah.
And Jacob Schultz.
Schultz.
So they were opening for us.
And Michael Hale.
They were opening for us. And then we did an acoustic tour, and he was the opener. And that was hilarious, because he would just leave without getting paid. At the end of the night, I'm getting paid, and the promoter would be like, hey, that opening guy didn't even get his money. Here's his money. He'd like, he'd just drive off.
He's a hippie, man.
Yeah.
Like a real deal hippie. Yeah. So what was it that made you make that choice for that? Like, did he approach you guys? Had you guys talked about it for a long time?
We had been there already, but it didn't materialize. Well, we went there to tour.
Oh, we just went.
We got invited there.
Working with...
Years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, but David's really...
Okay.
That's the thing. It's the two things together. And we had been there before, and it just never materialized. We just went there to check it out.
Yeah.
The dude who owns it, Tony just literally put us on a plane, said, come out, spend the night.
Yeah.
We'll have dinner.
Yeah.
And we checked it out.
Yeah.
And we're like, boy, that'd be great. That'd be great. And we just never sort of, came back to it. And then we were looking for something to do and somebody to work on the record. And
yeah, I'm not sure how we hit on David, but we'd been friends with him forever.
Yeah.
And so we were just like, well, we were just going to do a few songs. We weren't thinking in terms of
record. Oh, that's
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were just going to record because we had a Patreon. So we're just going to do songs for the Patreon.
Uh-huh.
That's all.
Okay.
So it was good. Like, well, let's go do 4 or 5 songs. And, it was just magic. He's so freakishly talented.
We did quite a few that week.
I don't really know anyone as gifted as him musically.
Like, I don't either.
To be able to just do...
And he never sits and doesn't quite get it. He rips through and does it one time.
Yeah.
And, like, that's it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, he might just go, well, I don't know about that, and then do it again a totally different way. You know, it's none of that hacking away and like 45 takes from the virtuoso guitar player.
If he's playing an instrument, it's going to go down really quick.
Yeah.
And it's like, not just guitar.
Yeah, even if it's an instrument he's just come across.
Possibly.
You know what I mean?
Like,
probably.
Yeah.
He's a very musical dude.
Or something.
Super musical. And the funny thing was trying to get him to play the thing. Because he'd be very like, no, brother, it'll sound better if you do it. You do it. And I'm like, why? Like, why? It's my music and I want it to sound this way. I am the composer.
Yeah.
And you are my conduit to realizing my composition. Like, why? Don't make me do this. It's going to chew up 25 minutes, 30 minutes, me doing it. You do it. It sounds magical right now. Do it. Lay it down, buddy.
He's all over this record.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
There's a lot of parts. It's just... Sometimes he does like to make you also, he likes to introduce difficulty, and I'm not sure what that's about, but he does. So he want you to try to sing it live, play it live, get as much of it live, which I understand. But then that's hard enough. Then he's like, here, brother, play this 12th string. And you're like, what? I'm supposed to be doing the lead vocal.
Yeah.
And you want me to play this 12th string too? These things go so out of tune so easily.
We're like the opposite of the monkeys.
I'm like,
we want We want the Wrecking Crew.
I'm like, do you want, well, it's more like a Steely Dan thing.
Yeah.
Steely
Dan. Okay, there you go.
You know, like get the best guys
to do it. I like the way
it.
You look.
Yeah.
Is there one track in particular on this new album that you would cite as David sort of really?
Yes. For me, America, most of those overdubs is him.
Mm-hmm.
Slide guitar.
Freaking bongos.
The percussion. Yeah. Of the slide guitar. There's a Spanish sounding guitar that comes in.
Yeah,
it's magic.
There's acoustic and electric.
These are all just passes too. These are all just put it up, go one time, boom, there it is.
So it wasn't fussed over. It wasn't sweated over at all.
No, he's moving at 100 miles an hour. It's awesome.
One of my favorite songs that I think you're right and I agree with America, but another one that has this thumbprint on it is Daydream.
Oh, yeah.
It's just got all this atmospheric, easy atmospheric, you know what I mean? Like not forced, like just super big and expansive, and yet it wasn't like that, thought out in any way.
That song...
And it sounds like where we were, for sure.
Yeah. So we have this song that we've never finished called, what is it called? Rearranged. We had this idea, we started with Adam Schlesinger, and it's such a great idea. But that song has wasted more of our lives than any other song.
We can never get it to work.
Like it on paper, it seems like it'll work. It never works. It never sounds good. It never lies down and never do what you want. It's just like, it's just one of these things. So we burned an entire day trying to make this song happen. And it was so frustrating. And at the end of the day, we sat there writing lyrics. We like fucking did endless takes. And at the end of the day, we're all burnt out, and it's just we have nothing.
Yeah, a couple of things didn't work.
We have nothing. You know? We have nothing at the end of the day. So we're having dinner, and now the wine comes out, we're drinking and everything, and then I'm like, hey, why don't we record this song, Daydream? And Tony's like, what? I thought we were fucking dead. And like, we weren't in a good mood, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it carried
but
over.
He agreed. He agreed to go in, so we did go in at the tail end. Like, it's like 11 o'clock at night. And man, that's probably the third take.
Yeah.
That.
Wow.
And all of that, my vocals aren't live, but all the stuff aside from the slide guitar, that's David, and I had that idea, put the slide and their vocals, but just the basic band playing together is all live. The acoustic guitar, David's electric guitar, Tony on bass and Joey on drums. Wow. It's one take, boom, down. Like, I think it was take three.
Yeah.
It was killer.
That's a great song, and you know that's. I'm glad that you brought that out because those two songs, America and Daydream, are like almost new palettes for you guys. Like a, you know what I mean? Like a new,
I think,
sound.
I don't think it's a new palette, but I do think it's a new kind of like we didn't wouldn't put it out. Like we've done some things that
are kind of dreamy like
touch,
that.
Touch yeah, at yeah. it, but never really like made it. This one's realized, I think.
Yeah.
Daydream.
Yeah. That's a
good
song.
We've had seagulls before. Like the kind of, I know it's not literal seagulls, but that vibe, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
We've had it on other songs.
That we didn't put out.
Yes, exactly.
The Adam Schlesinger thing, I just found out today. I didn't, what was it? He did like the first record after you guys.
We had a record called Keep Your Wig On. We went.
Was that the one on Rykodisc?
Yeah, and we went to work with him, and we did probably...
Some of that stuff.
We did like four or five songs with him, but we only ended up using two of the things that he did.
Okay.
I don't know why.
We got dropped from Hollywood, so we're in a whole new...
Yeah, but you don't remember why you made certain decisions because there's a song on there called Even If It Takes a Lifetime
that we never
put out. Yeah. That's really good.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just sitting there.
It's like a hit ballad, actually.
We never put
it's
it out.
It's got that kind of...
You go back and listen to it. You go, what was wrong with this? What were you guys smoking? Like, what's the problem? It's really weird. And then you have songs like Mercenary Girl that are on the record that aren't bad, but you're like, really? So you... Shelve this one
and
right.
put this one
and
out.
Put this one on.
It's so odd.
It is weird.
The choices
that
people
really
make.
You don't really know the decision making.
That's a fairly odd record. I mean.
But it was a difference.
Flip Your Wig.
Keep Your Wig On.
I always call it Flip Your Wig. I always think Husker Du.
Yeah.
It's a different time, though. That's the important thing to remember. You had to make choices. because you had to put out a record. Now you can put everything out.
Yeah.
Was Keep Your Wig On the album that sort of was sort of a, not a comeback record for you guys, but wasn't there a time where you guys were
actually,
or what?
All of our records are comeback
records. Good point.
And there always always seems, especially during the 2000s, it was like really few and far between as far as releases go.
Right. Uh-huh.
We got moving again around 2012 and really started.
Yeah, that, and then started getting consistent output.
Well, 2016 output is when we really started putting out records on a consistent basis.
Okay, so. Yeah.
But there was a big gap
Step
between,
in the Light is 2016.
Yeah.
And then it just moves from
because
there.
2009 was when we put out Little White Lies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, that's
and then
right.
there was a huge gap.
Like right.
Probably we might have even broken up, you know. We hadn't broken up, but we weren't really doing anything.
Right. Yeah. And you guys both put out solo albums.
We were going out and playing, and that's it.
But like even that was one-offs. 12 shows a year or something, so it's just barely there, you know.
What brings you guys back together when, you know, I mean, what keeps a band together on and off for 30 years, you know?
We had poor management
during
that time, that weird time.
Mm-hmm.
And we...
When you say the weird time, you mean which time?
The time when nothing was coming out.
Yeah.
Things got weird for a long time, if you want to call it
and
weird.
It's not like we didn't want to.
Yeah.
We wanted to be productive and we wanted to be out there.
Well, I remember, and I think, Miles, I talked to you about this. I remember being down here for a CMJ showcase right around the time of the third record and getting into a conversation with you. And you were not in a good state of mind. That was a tough period for you guys.
It sucked.
Yeah. You guys
were... It straight up sucked.
Yeah.
If you're just looking at it through the prism of, like, how we doing, we weren't... The band wasn't doing well. You'd play shows and nobody'd be there.
And constantly told that we can't do a hard ticket tour. Mm. We can't play.
Well, you'd go to these... You'd go to places and there'd be eight people. There'd be three people. One time we played in fucking Milwaukee...
Oh
at Shank God. Hall.
That's right.
And there
the guy was mad.
There was four people there. And the promoter was sitting in our dressing room when we arrived. Like, I knew it wasn't going to be good. And it's just miserable. You know, that's a lot to have to try to, you're going, oh, we still have a band. It sure doesn't feel like it, right? Like, no one cares.
Yeah.
But for me, so probably, speaking for myself, at some point, I'm just like, well, it's dead. It's like a plant in the backyard. It's just like, well, it's dead. I'm not going to bother watering it anymore because no one cares. Yeah. And collectively, it wasn't like we're in a really great spot. We weren't.
Mm-hmm.
So it just felt like it was dead and gone. But then you come back the next summer and the plant's still alive. You're like, how could this be? Like,
we got offers.
There were still interests. Yeah. There were still people that cared. And when I really made, and then we'd get these weird tours where, like, out of the blue, do you want to go out with the Gin Blossoms on this thing? We went and did that tour, and then we came back. And for me, the turning point was that Tony had a gig at Strange Brew with Renfro, and for some reason, they couldn't do it. And he literally called me and Joey. I think it was the day of, maybe.
So weekly gig that I was doing with this band, Renfro.
Mm-hmm.
So, one week, they were all doing their fucking Skyrocket or whatever.
Yeah. So, and I think then it might have been the day of or the day before.
So we had a fastball.
It was extremely short notice. And he said, will you come and do this gig? And Joey and I both said yes. And we just put it on Facebook like the night before. Or maybe even day of, I don't remember. We show up and there's like 100 people there. And I was like, damn.
People give a shit.
And I was like, people care. And they went nuts. You know, they really did. And when, I'll never forget, you weren't there. You had left or you were getting paid. I don't know. But Joey and I were standing outside. And I'm like, we really shouldn't let this thing die. Like, this is a good thing. We should try to make this go. And that was kind of the turning point, was like right there in that parking lot.
And what year was that?
That was probably 2014, 15.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know.
I don't remember.
15, probably.
2015. Mm-hmm. And then we had this manager that was managing Gin Blossoms. We went down part of the road with him, got, you know, we made a record, even though he was like, don't make a record. What's
he
the
didn't
point?
Believe in us.
He's
at all.
Like, well, he was just very cynical about it. Look, all people care about is the way. Go out and play the way. I'm going to get you these things. And That's it. Just the most cynical. You're like, look, they're going to hear the song. We can't play it 90 times. You know, they're going to hear it. Mm-hmm. What do you want us to do? Mm-hmm. Well, we got to fill the rest of the time. And we're musicians and we're artists. So we're going to do what we fucking want. Like, fuck it. So we made the record even though he didn't care. That record turned out to be Step Into Light.
Yeah.
And he just didn't care. Had no interest in putting it out. And we parted ways with him. And then through a series of things, we ended up with Ron Stone and Gold Mountain, and everything changed right around then.
Also, mm-hmm. publishing too. So the publishing thing turned everything around too. For
right, we had
not those, the way for Out of My Head.
Right,
we had that song with Machine Gun Kelly and Camila Cabello. Yeah. So that turned out to be a big kick in the pants and wind in our sails. You know, all of a sudden things were starting to happen right at the same time that we're putting out this record.
Yeah,
it all started to go. And then from that point on,
big tour with Everclear too.
It just 2017. Everything started to roll again, and it's just gotten better and better and better.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's something weird happens perception wise too, where right 2000, 2001, 2002, you're one hit wonder, you're has been, you're nothing, but then like Wine. 2015.
Yeah,
aged, you haven't opened this.
You've aged like fine wine, and people are like, your music is fucking good.
Yeah,
I love your music because our music is good.
Yeah,
and we've never done anything. We've never put out anything. We're like, what? What were we smoking? We put that out. I listen to our records. I'm like, fucking great music.
Yeah, so well crafted, well constructed.
It's just good song. Yeah. Good, like fucking. And we've gotten better and better as a band. So. You know, context is everything. In this context, all of a sudden, it's like you guys are survivors. You guys are legends. Some people call us legends, you know, whatever you want to say, but we're still doing it.
Yeah.
And not many people are.
No.
From none, when we.
Hardly any of our peers.
Yeah. It's crazy.
And none of them have the same members. So, you know.
I'm just about to do a Magnet Classics on another fellow touring act with, 90s touring act with the Gin Blossoms, Toad the Wet Sprocket.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And Dulcinea. Remember that record?
Nope.
Well, that was their kind of hit record. That's, it's.
Was that the one with All I Want and everything?
That had Something's Always Wrong on it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it's just funny. All these albums celebrating like the 25th or the 30th makes you feel kind of old.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. A lot of that stuff holds up. Your stuff holds up. To an extent, the Toad stuff holds up. Gin Blossom stuff, you know, especially the early stuff, just really strong
songwriting.
They're like
a classic American rock band to me. Like, yeah. Like, there's nothing not to love about the Gin Blossoms.
They were a bar band when I was a grad student at Arizona State.
Oh, okay.
So I was in on the whole Douglas Hopkins era. Mm-hmm.
Mason Jar.
Mason Jar and the Sun Devil House or the Sun Club. But that's a whole nother story. But you guys have, yeah. I mean, I can see that you reach a tipping point with this stuff where people. Their memories fade and people see more as like a durable, good band rather than just this band that had this
durable goods.
In. Yeah, you guys are durable. I would say that, right? Right?
Well, the important thing is it's important to live in the present, and in the present you always have the opportunity every single night you go out there to have an amazing evening. Mm-hmm. Musically, mm-hmm. and to blow people away and to have a great time. Mm-hmm. And it's every night, it's a renewed shot.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the way I live my life. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go in there going like, oh, well,
let's get this over with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there were times we were in that state of mind, you know,
yeah.
Where you're not happy and the inner band dynamics aren't good and your career's going nowhere. But I didn't have that state of mind back then.
Mm-hmm.
I was too wrapped up in what was happening to me and how I felt about it instead of like, look, you got a job to do. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the be all end all. You're here. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're here, you came all this way, fucking crush it. Get out there and crush it. Don't worry about this or that or the other. There's nothing you can do about that right now.
Yeah.
Should we go back to Desert Songs a little bit real quick?
Yeah, but I did want to point this one thing out because there's a couple of things that I've always been fascinated with is how a band stays together. And just that talk that you guys made that decision outside of Strange Brew that night changed everything so much. And just a couple of things. One of them was when I first went to go play with you guys, like we rehearsed and stuff, but I didn't know exactly because I'm friends with you.
Yeah.
I'm friends with you. We've done stuff together. I'm friends with Joey. I didn't know him that well, but I had never really dealt with you guys as a group. And in my mind, you're so fucking different as people. Like your interests are different and all this kind of shit. But like the, it was a great vibe. Like when we were in that trailer in Pittsburgh, like for hours.
And Whammo showed up
and made the night. But like just that camaraderie and that the shows that you guys like getting to be a part, it's making the hair on my arm stand up. Getting to be a part of it was great, but also getting to step off. It's weird when I played with them, the one memo that I got was like, hey, you're not playing on the way. Because they had
no one gets to play on the way. It's really sad.
I get to play
on
the biggest song. What's crazy? Come on.
I know.
But getting to watch it and every crowd we played for sang that song very loudly back to the band. It was beautiful. And then interacting with some of your fans that are fucking lifers. You know what I mean? That was amazing. So it's a great testament to you guys as people and the fact that you were able to hold it together.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Now back to Desert Songs.
Oh, I was going to go back to Desert Songs, but something else that made me think about is that when we were discussing The Way and that album for Magnet back a few years ago, the whole story behind that song and wasn't it almost like a mariachi sort of thing you had on a cassette tape or something that sort of started all of that thing?
Like you know, a Casio keyboard has an autoplay kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I built a progression. Actually, the progression I wrote on a guitar, so I just formed those chords on the machine. It's, without getting too technical, if you hit one note, it's a major chord. Yeah. But if you hit the note below it as well, it turns into a minor chord. So I was able to do that along with a backing track. You know, that kind of primitive 80s, not really a studio instrument or anything, just a sort of toy. And that's how that was built.
And in the reissue of that album, I think there's a demo of that, right?
Yeah, that's the same. It's really the same keyboard.
Go back and listen to that.
The demo
and what it turned into.
Keyboard.
Yeah.
So the demo used that thing and had that track behind it.
Yeah.
And we went to the studio without that keyboard. And we almost fell into a chasm, we almost fell into not having that sound and not being able to do the song like we felt it.
Right.
And then Miles did manage to get the keyboard before coming out to Los Angeles, the actual keyboard, and boom, we had it. We had an engineer build a loop off of that keyboard. And this is back in 97.
Yeah.
You know, this is not those times.
It's so easy now.
Yeah. We were working with tape.
I could send it to you on my phone and then
put it in GarageBand and just play around.
You could do it in seconds. Yeah. But we had to actually drive to this guy's house.
Yeah, we had to use the very brilliant Kim Bullard, who happens to be Elton John's keyboard player. And he was in Poco too.
Yeah.
Elton John needs a keyboard player?
Yeah.
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 So does Brian Wilson.
There's a lot of synths a lot of synths on Sad Songs Say So Much, you know?
Yeah, there are.
There's a lot of stuff going on in the back.
Anyway, that's
yeah, I remember that. I remember that story. But back to Desert Songs. And it was funny, I was looking over at your notes, Johnny, and I see all of these producers that you guys have worked with. I'd forgotten you guys work with Steve Berlin.
Yeah.
Recently.
Yeah.
Was this the best experience with a producer you've had?
They're all pretty good.
Yeah.
They're all good. This was what made this so much fun is, again, it's just his musicianship. Getting to play with a musician of that caliber and he just surprised you with, it's just like someone that can, it's hard to describe, but when he plays things, you go, oh, of course, why didn't I think of that? I didn't realize that door was there. You know, to just have those things open up right in front of you, right in real time, it's pretty amazing. So musically, I would say musically by far, the most amazing experience.
Yes, but Steve Berlin wouldn't. I thought, man, he's going to bring in his saxophones.
No, he didn't want to play.
And he wouldn't play. He wouldn't play on the record.
No.
But all of them have been great in their own way. Whatever their strength is, whatever their specialty is, they've all been great. They all provide something that we wouldn't be able to provide.
Well, when I heard that David was the producer on this album, I was like, ooh. And, you know, because I wasn't, you know, you think back to what he did with Fiona Apple and all that stuff. Still feels very much like a fastball record. It's, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're so not Fiona Apple. I mean, she's awesome. I fucking love that record.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was
Bust
a great
out
record.
The butt pliers or whatever it's called.
Yeah, yeah.
What is it called?
Something about the
bowl cutters.
Yeah, the bowl cutters. Bowl, right. Yeah, yeah. That's the bowl cutters.
Yeah, but like, you know, the first track of Desert Songs sounds just like a beautiful vintage fastball.
Well,
song.
We did that with John Field. There
you go.
And it's not deserty.
No. It's fastball-y, but it's not deserty.
Here's what happened. We were just going...
We had a show. In Minneapolis.
And John Fields was just going to mix. He mixed Hummingbird. He mixed Daydream. He did stuff. So we were just going there to kind of meet him and kind of make sure the mixes were good. That's it. But Tony was hot to do this song he had. Okay? Tony was trying to squeeze in the song. But we're coming in on a Thursday, let's say, show's on Friday. That's it. That's all the time we have. We come in Thursday, like at 4, go to dinner with John Fields.
Uh-huh.
After dinner, we walk back to his studio. We're at the studio. We're listening to the mixes. They're like, fucking great. We had to make some decisions on America. There's a shit ton of overdubs. What to keep in, what to leave out. So we did that.
John added some accordion instantly, but... Go ahead.
This is like post-dinner now. We're like, we've had some wine and there's some weed going
Sounds
around.
Like a really rough time you guys had at Sonic Ranch.
This wasn't Sonic Ranch.
But we're just
relaxing and decompressing.
Yeah. We don't know if anything's going to really come out of it, like a new song.
And then Tony says, I've got this idea for this song. And he wants to try to record it the next day.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to this song. Now, I'm in an altered state, and I'm sitting there just listening to it, and I'm going, you know, that part's good, that part's good, but the beginning, no. And really, I have a chorus that would fit, and I just go, hey, check this out, and I present it to him.
It totally works.
And he goes, this is so great. And so then John Fields goes, let's record it right now. And I'm like, what? I didn't know we're gonna work right now. Like I was.
And this is without drums. No drums yet.
So
Joey's not here yet.
Okay.
So
we lay down. There. John Fields is
flying in.
Like David in his own way. John Fields, he can play anything. He's got a great voice, and he's very enthusiastic. And he's like, let's just do this right now. And I was like, right now? Like what about tomorrow? And he's like, let's do it right now. Let's at least get the form down.
Mm-hmm. So and we got the form down.
So we
down.
Did. We put some acoustics down. Tony sang a guide. We like freaking. The next day we come in.
Yeah, but you left.
I left, yeah. Cause
okay,
I was like,
you left. And then Joey calls. How's it going over there? Hey, guys, how's it going over there? I go, it's good. Can you come to the studio before you go to the hotel? And he goes, sure.
Oh, was that the same night?
I don't know, but I'm just saying we didn't have drums yet.
No, we put the drums on like last.
No, he came in that night after you left and put down the drums.
So I don't remember. Really. Okay.
There you go. See a little bit of wine, weed, whites, whatever. Yeah.
I don't remember, but I
Joey put the drums down that night, and then we finished the song the next day. But we didn't really finish it because we still didn't have
the intro
with the riff, which is his. Riff.
No.
I thought it sounded so ridiculously 90s alt, like Bowling for Soup, right? I thought it was like, this is too much, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like the Kids in the Hall theme, you know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
But anyway, after we got it down, And then he wrote some new words. And then I sent him from my house.
Yeah, that's right.
We finished it from, you know, from remote areas.
Interesting. And is that the only John Field song on the album?
Well, no, because he ended up putting his thumbprint on half the record.
Okay.
By mixing. Okay. And by adding other instruments.
That's
he put some strings on the song.
He was like, the thing about John Fields is, you know, you think about recording studios and all the beautiful gear and the huge board and all the stuff, and we're going into the studio. John Fields is not precious like that at all. John mm-hmm. Fields is, he goes, hey, how come there's no acoustic here? It's there for like the first four bars, just drops out. I go, oh, you know, that's because we have a Sonic Ranch. We were moving at 100 miles an hour, and we just didn't. He goes, well, you should do one. And I said, okay, I'll see you next week. We can do it then. He goes, why? Why are you waiting? Let's do it right now. I'm like, I'm at my house. He goes, yeah, get a microphone and put the acoustic. I go, I'm not an engineer. He goes, doesn't matter. Do it. Just drop an acoustic down. Mm-hmm. I put the acoustic down. I fucking email it to him. It sounds insanely great. And so then he's like, redo the vocal on this. Redo this. And right. you're doing it from your house. Like,
yeah.
And so you realize, wow, I don't actually need to go anywhere. We can make records so just like this.
There was one more thing for another song that involved John very much. And it was the solo to the song Let Love Back in Your Heart. I don't know. You guys didn't have the titles, but there was a solo, right? Yeah. That needed to happen. And John had a guy come in, this blues cat, this young guy, and he did many, many passes of it. And I didn't like any of it. I thought it was too Bonamassa, you know, fucking guitar slinger.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we tried other things. Miles tried one.
I never got to try one.
You didn't?
No.
I thought you sent one that
I didn't know.
Maybe
it
was the original one
I never got involved. This thing turned in. Talk about Steely Dan.
I mean,
talking about this when I was playing with you.
And I'm looking right now at Jeff Skunk Baxter your wall.
He had a go at it.
We got him to do two passes.
He had a go at it.
I didn't like what he was doing. Yeah. He didn't bother to listen to.
Seriously?
Yeah, it was all surfed out. And I'm like, dude, you're busy. If we could be together.
Dude, you're busy. Yeah,
if we could be together, then maybe it'll work. He agreed.
Tony did a solo that ended up being the solo. Kevin McKinney did a solo. Yeah.
David did a solo.
Kevin McKinney.
Jeff Skunk Baxter did a solo. And this blues guy did a solo. Everyone did a solo but me. I have a feeling I could have probably, you know.
Well, I think it's done now. And I love the solo, and I couldn't see any other solo on there. So that's just the way that ended up. But it was very funny to think that here I am emailing Jeff Skunk Baxter, and he's like, I thought you told me you wanted it short and sweet and blah, blah, you know, and then it's like, if we could just be together. Anyway, you know all about him.
Yeah, he's a nice fellow.
Yeah, he was cool, and he was very funny.
Yeah.
We were trying to get another, we're trying to get to listen to what he had done. And some of our people don't really know how to use the internet that well. And they're like, I can't seem to pull up the solo. Where's the skunk solo? I go, perhaps it's classified. I was like, did I really send that? You know? And I was like, oh man. I was joking about his like sort of security clearance.
Thing.
And then it turns out he came back with like, here's the solo in case you missed it. And it's like asterisk, you know, like printed classification, you know.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it was funny. He played along is what I'm saying.
Yeah. You know, I got the thing I said to him was, which doobie you be? What's happening?
Yeah,
and he thought that was fantastic.
Oh
and
my
that's hilarious. I earned his trust. Now I got security clearance.
He has a line in that too.
Yeah.
Skunk has a line where he says something like, hey, that's our music.
Right, right,
man.
Right. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I loved that show.
Me too. What's happening, baby?
And that was the apex of their their run.
Oh boy, yeah. That theme song the is bouncing Brothers around in my skull right now.
The Doobie Brothers two-parter.
It's a two-parter, yeah. Yeah. Oh, continued next week.
Do you guys, you guys are heading out on tour in mm-hmm. April.
When's the album out?
I don't know.
June.
Now okay. It's June.
That's what yeah. I found out.
Okay.
After we rush and yeah. like the deadline's coming. We need a title now. We need a cover and a title.
And it's not coming out till
we've given you multiple titles as and I multiple
love,
covers.
As I love to say, all roads lead to TAP.
Yeah,
you know, it's like they were on tour with no album. We're on tour with no album. You know, it's like Spinal
yeah.
Tap. You can, as they say, we're you can preview the new music. Here's a new one.
The single will be out though in April.
Okay. And what's the
and
single?
We'll be touring then, and we're hoping to get the album out and have something in summer.
What is the single?
I'd Rather Be Me Than You.
Okay.
We should talk about maybe doing a premiere on Magnum. We do a lot of video and single sure, premieres. Yes. That'd be fun.
We saw the rough cut of the video last night.
Cool.
It's looked really good.
Yeah.
It's funny. It is rock and roll, and it's local. It's got a vibe.
Nice.
An Austin-y. Some of it's shot in Lockhart. Some of it's shot here. But it's fun.
So the touring that you're doing is April is mostly you guys, right? On your own? I saw that there's...
Well, yeah,
we're the headliner.
Okay.
We're going the first couple, like first 8 days or 6 days, I don't know how many days, this band, Hefner?
Hefner, yeah.
Not the British band Hefner from the 90s, though.
Ah,
they have
that's
two F's in their name, and they're from Atlanta area.
Okay.
Interesting. And they're young.
How'd you guys end up with teaming up with them?
I don't know.
Our agent. Got him.
I had somebody from Atlanta I wanted, and it was sad to tell them, like, no, they've already got somebody. Oh. Leg.
Yeah.
Because I had it all. I mean, you know, that's the way it goes.
You guys have been playing in Miami, I saw.
We are.
Yeah. Live the dream. Now,
and we got another one in Boca.
Oh,
Boca!
Yeah?
We're big in Florida.
Don't
we
you live
are
in Boca?
Playing literally six shows in Florida.
Boca. I lived in Vero Beach.
Oh, where do you live now?
I live in outside of Philly. I'm back in Philly.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't know
oh,
that.
Oh, we're doing Philly if you want to come.
Yeah, where are you going to be?
Oh, I don't know.
I think we're at City Winery.
You got to look.
Oh, you're at the City Winery.
I think.
That's a great
venue. But I don't know.
That's cool.
You have to look.
I saw Lyle Lovett there.
We played there before in a little room.
Yeah.
speaking of great rhythm sections, Lyle Lovett had Russ Kunkel and,
Lee Sklar. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well,
an
great.
Amazing band. So you guys are doing that. Are you guys doing anything for South By?
No.
Do you do no shows?
Mm-mm.
Just laying low?
I moved to Bastrop.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
How do you like it?
I love it.
Yeah?
I love it because I can go to the store in 5 minutes without passing a car.
Yeah.
It's quiet. I'm not in the flight path anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you have to pick your times coming in and out of town because traffic, it's only 71.
Yeah.
It's great. I love it. I was getting a little burned out on North Austin life. There's kind of...
You're still in Central Austin, right?
Hyde Park,
still
baby.
Hyde Park, baby.
If I lived there, it would be different.
Yeah.
But I didn't. And I'm trying to sell my house now. And so I'm over there, like, that's where I was this morning, just basically... On the ground, pulling weeds and just making it look nice, and because people keep coming over looking at it. But
I've got one last question.
Yeah, please.
Geographical question.
Uh-huh.
Is Fastball the fact that Fastball is an Austin band? Has that meant anything to anybody other than you guys? I mean,
it did at the beginning, but you know, the only people who recognize that, well, the people who don't recognize us as an Austin band. Are the people of Austin. The rest of the world is like, Austin, man, that's a really cool town, isn't it? Isn't it great?
I don't think it's informed us as,
not really,
as musicians.
Yeah. At the beginning, it helped us.
It hasn't had any effect on... It's not... I don't know. I don't think... I feel like we're an export, and we're not really big in Texas itself. It's not mm-hmm. really... It's not... We're just not. I don't know why. I don't know why these things happen. But
Calvin Russell.
But for me...
Remember that guy?
Yeah.
For me, Austin's had a tremendous effect on me and musically. It's just there's no other place like it, and there's so much so much roots music here that you just don't hear. Like, you live here, and you're being exposed to all kinds of music that doesn't get played on the radio, and that isn't really part of popular culture. Mm-hmm. And then but it's all around us, so it definitely informs your sensibility, you know? Like, again, coming back around to the Prodigy, when I looked at that video of them playing live in Arizona, and then I looked at how many views it had, and it was insane. It had so many million views, and then I went and looked at the official video for Firestarter. It had something like 200 million views, and I go, oh, this is popular music. You know, this is what popular music actually is. It's not the bands we like or any of that.
No.
It's electronic music is what's popular. Here in Austin, though, you have this little ecosystem where, like, fuck, you see amazing music that isn't really that big the rest of the world.
So I remember kind of go off on a tangent on that a little bit. I remember being here in the middle of June one year, and Darren, staying with Darren, and Darren said, let's go out and see some music. It's like a Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. And we go to the Continental Club, and there's Joey playing drums with John D.
It would be Wednesday night.
Yeah. So it was middle of the week. And I'm like, and there's what, 60 people there. And we're just watching this amazing band. And obviously,
yeah. John and then D's Larry, amazing. And then James McMurtry.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I play in this weekly gig at the Saxon Pub with these guys. And before my show, I went to go eat at this restaurant down
like the Bruce Hughes and those guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Resentments. Yeah.
And I went down the street to have like a little pre-show dinner. And it's this Spanish restaurant. And they had some nights, just, I guess it's once a month, they have this flamenco night. And the freaking guy is just playing the most beautiful Spanish guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going, I live in an amazing place. Because this is just one of, you could spend the whole day seeing music on a Sunday. Yeah. No problem. Yeah. You go down to South Congress on a Sunday, there's going to be music at Joe's Coffee. Mm-hmm. And then you can just go up and down that street. There's going to be music. You fill your whole day with music every single day of the week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you go to other towns, you realize, oh, they don't have that.
No.
It's not part of their thing.
No.
You can't even get that in Nashville. I mean, if you can get cover bands all day, you know, on Broadway, but
cover bands here
too.
It's different. Though. Yeah,
yeah.
There's another thing about this town that I've noticed over the last like 6 months, and I've noticed that as the audience isn't really ageist. I mean, it's not like we're playing at Hotel Vegas, you know, on Saturday night, like doing the thing, but like in worlds like the Saxon Pub, like. People don't like it's almost you don't get marginalized as much as you kind of get like, oh man, this guy's like Yoda, you know what I mean?
Yoda.
Or like Obi-Wan or some kind of like, this guy's got some knowledge, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I feel like the audiences here are kind of like that.
There's kind of a 50 plus rock scene happening
yeah,
right
there
now.
Is.
Have you heard the Stairs?
No,
Stayres.
Uh-uh.
Hunter Darby and Mike Nicolai.
I love Hunter.
Are in it. Andy McGuire and John Sanchez, they're playing with Larry Seaman, and they're playing lots of gigs. The what's the Carrie and Pam?
Oh yeah, the Living Pins.
Living Pins.
They're incredible.
You know, and all these people are, you know, almost retirement age, and they kick ass.
Yeah,
and play rock shows at the parlor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Pocket Fishermen are still playing.
Look at that.
Insane.
You guys are still playing 30 years.
Yeah.
30 years.
I mean, fuck, that's a long time, man.
Yeah.
I went back and listened to album number one the other day just because I knew I was going to just.
I sound like a little girl.
That's the album that.
I sing like a little girl on that.
But that wasn't the second album wasn't because I was in Houston. And I remember I saw you guys at Rudyard's.
Oh, yeah. Together
touring behind the first album. The touring was at that point.
Our touring would be get in the van and drive up I-35 and play Kansas City and St. Louis. and go play Minneapolis and Chicago and Nebraska and come back home. That was the tour every time.
I saw you guys here with Matthew Sweet on that.
That was killer. Yeah. That was a lot of fun. That was the first like
was that
real
Liberty
tour
Lunch?
We got.
Where did we
Liberty Lunch.
I think that was the first time I saw you guys since you had been Magneto USA, and there was like that kind of like, oh man, they're like you guys were so much huger sounding.
Well, nothing
you know
like
I mean?
40 days straight.
Yeah, we got really, really
to
good.
Make you very good.
We got good playing. We got to tour with Matthew a lot. We got to do like two separate tours and probably 2 or 3 months.
And that was a great band too.
Yeah,
Rick Mank on drums.
And Ivan Julian.
Uh huh.
I did a Magna Classics on the Girlfriend album, and that is still by far my most listened to.
Yeah, there was no
podcast.
Richard Lloyd on this tour, but Ivan Julian from Richard Hell and the Voidoids.
Yeah.
You had Tony Marsico from The Plugs.
One of the funniest things he told me about that album, and it may not have been him. It may have been one of the producers that told me this, but all of those guitar solos are basically pieced together.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then Matthew said, when we get a guy, whoever his guitar player was when they toured, first guitar player or whatever, or he would take a guitar, and the guitar player would have to learn those solos.
Uh-huh.
And they're all like basically pieces of different Richard Lloyd, you know.
Right.
They would just tell him to play, and then they would just take the best bits and piece them together. But as far as the first record, everything's about 100 miles an hour on that.
Yeah.
Record.
Yeah.
But that's, there's still some good songs.
And yelled.
On Waiting for the Fallout. Yeah. Fallout's still a great tune. There's some
I
great
yell ones. That for some reason. Yeah. And just.
Do you guys play any
we
of
play
that
it all
stuff
the time.
For the first
day? Tony doesn't want to do Fallout anymore.
It was on the
really
list.
Hard, really? To sing.
It was on the list, but then we never played it when I played with you guys.
Well, if we need to play it, then I'll play it. But I mean, it's
the
not a first choice.
The thing about it is, if I could go back in time and I could tell myself, you just don't have the musical knowledge you need to realize the things you want to do. It took time for us to develop into. Mm-hmm. Now we know what we're doing. Like you realize there's so many things that you have to learn. I mean, just one of the things I learned is like, you have an instrument, you have a voice. It's not going to sound good on everything. It just won't.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain things that are out of your range. There's also certain things that just don't sound good when you sing them. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But here's the things you are really good at singing. Write more of that. Mm-hmm. And once you realize what you're good, what you can really pull off with total command and authority, that's when you start to shine. That's when people go, fuck, you guys are amazing.
Yeah.
It's because you figured it out. Back then, we hadn't figured it out. That's why it sounds the way it does. It's just like you don't know really what you're doing. You haven't spent enough
and
hours.
And I know I overcompensated with like an aggressive delivery on everything I did. Way too loud, way too fast, way too earnest for nothing. You know, why am I so adamant? What am I adamant about?
I think maybe it's just the sound of insecurity collectively.
Uh-huh.
It's like everything is so fast, and it's because you're afraid.
Well, you didn't really know who.
Well, it's
for that first
excitement
album,
too.
I don't think
it's not just insecurity. It's
you
like excitement,
be, right? Were you a punk band? Were
you
Green Day? Were you?
Right.
I mean, that was back when.
Well, you haven't figured out your deal. But the thing is, when you do figure out your deal, you realize like you can lay back more, and you can actually deliver. You can communicate so much better.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to if you don't. Mm-hmm. Really know who you are or what you're trying to say, it's very hard to communicate. Well,
okay, so who are you? Who do you guys, what do you guys see?
I mean,
I don't, a really good rock band?
I see, but see, to define it is to diminish it.
Yeah.
So you don't
that's
need,
your job.
You don't need it. It's not for us to define or take apart. It's not even for us to.
But you know who you are. But
totally.
You don't really, yeah.
You're coming from a place.
I know what we're not when I hear it.
Yeah. You can, and but the thing is, you want to keep it open to experimentation. You don't want to start self-editing yourself. You can edit after you've done the creating. Mm-hmm. Then you go, this rearranged song really doesn't work. You know, you throw it out.
Yeah.
You do that after, but the point is, you trust in the knowledge. Like, well, I'm good at. when you say who you are, it's not that. It's like, I make this kind of, this is my kind of beer that I, mm-hmm. that I brew. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm really good at. Mm-hmm. And it's Hefeweizen or whatever it is. I don't mm-hmm. do stouts. Mm-hmm. I'm not good at making stouts. Mm-hmm. I could do Hefeweizen or mm-hmm. I can do this IPA. Mm-hmm. It's like that. So, mm-hmm. so you, it's exploring within those confines what you're really good at. With an open mind, you know, and
I think
see where you
for
go.
You guys, one thing is just the songwriting. It's yeah. Solid songwriting. Great hooks.
Yeah.
Arrangements. You know, you guys fit that mold of just well-crafted, you know, energetic.
I love songs.
Yeah.
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 And I love great songs.
Yeah.
And when you hear a great song, it's just undeniable.
Yeah. Mm.
Like I saw a band last night and they started playing this song. It was a country band, but they started to play this song and everyone in the audience around me started to sing along. And I was going like, okay, did they write this song? And I didn't know the verse to this song, but it was, and when the night falls, my lonely, it was the verse of, I want, and they were playing, wow. I want to dance with somebody, and people were singing it from the verse, and I go, there you go. Undeniable,
yeah.
undeniable, yeah. great song.
Yeah.
I saw Shaky Graves last night, he opened with Where Is My Mind by the Pixies, the whole audience was singing along. Great mm-hmm. song. Mm-hmm. Great mm-hmm. songs win every mm-hmm. single time.
Yep. Yep.
And that's all you need to know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Paul told me he was at Mike and the Moon Pies the other night, and they played The Way, and the whole audience was singing.
Yeah.
Well, because it's in our DNA as human beings to want a collective experience. But mm-hmm. if the song sucks, it's not going to do that.
No.
But
no.
if the song is great, it does it effortlessly. People sing along. They want to yeah. sing along.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to bring up a point about the song, too. And it turns out... I've been listening to a lot of albums lately, mm-hmm. like with a critical ear, you know, deep listening kind of thing. And what makes this album great? What is it? And I look at my record collection and I realize I buy most of my records, my albums, for one or two songs.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I had a girlfriend who just played one song off of an album all the time and play it over yeah. again. And I realize I do that. And there's a few albums in my collection that I haven't heard, you know, but I was listening to London Calling the other day and that's a double album
mm-hmm. yeah.
and every song is insane.
Every song
good.
Is another yeah. journey on yeah. that album. It's like many different.
I had a gig in LaGrange and I was at the gym and I was listening to The Clash. So I'd been listening to The Clash for about 45 minutes, and I heard all the hits. Mm-hmm. And then I got in the car, and now I my phone is still playing The Clash. And I go, well, I've got about a two-hour drive. I'll just I'll just play the rest of this, because it was This Is The Clash.
Uh-huh. Right, right. Mm-hmm.
I go, I'll just play the rest of this until I get bored, until the songs are no good. I never had to turn it off. Mm-mm. It was insane how many great songs they have, mm-hmm. just one after another, mm-hmm. man. Mm-hmm. White Man and Hammersmith Palais, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. over and over and
I
over.
I know.
Rudy Can't Fail.
Yep.
Mm. I mean, Julie's Been Working for the Drug Squad.
Yeah, yeah.
Like just every song is great.
I know.
Yeah. I'm like, wow.
I like that false start at the beginning of Wrong and Boyo.
yeah. Start all over again, because they're doing Stagger Lee.
Yeah.
Stagger Lee, don't do
so many classic moments. Sandinista's got some great moments on it, too.
Charlie Don't Surf.
A little bit of a sprawl, but...
Uh-huh.
Charlie Don't Surf. Yeah.
London Calling's second song is Brand New Cadillac.
Yeah.
Which was a rockabilly hit in England in the 50s. And it's like, what a great choice, and yet how did you come up with putting that as your second song?
Yeah.
I have a great story for you real quick about The Clash. I saw The Clash in Laredo where I grew up. They came through because they wanted to see the streets of Laredo. So they came through on their way to headline the US Festival.
Oh, wow.
I saw them for the last time they were ever going to be together. Like they
Marty
did a,
Robbins
they did
country.
A hand, yeah. handful of dates.
Yeah, that was when they had the other Topper wasn't with them, right?
No, sadly he wasn't there. But Joe Ely was there. Charlie Sexton and the Eager Beaver Boys opened.
Yeah.
The Clash were not that good because Topper wasn't there.
And then, he was amazing.
And then years later, I went to Prague and I happened to see Joe Strummer coming through town. And I went to this little club and Joe Strummer played, and his backing band was this punk band from Sweden, these three dudes. They were so much better than The Clash because these three dudes were super stoked.
All right.
They weren't jaded. They weren't like, I fucking hate you, you know. They were into it. And they fucking, these guys were all in their 20s. And they opened with London Calling. Ugh. And they went right into Brand New Cadillac. And then the power went out.
Ugh.
And the power was out for like 40 minutes. And when they come back on, Joe Strummer was like, let's just start all over again. Bam, bam, bam. So I got to hear those two songs twice.
That's so killer.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, guys, man, congratulations on this record. Yep. Desert Songs comes out at some point in June. You guys can find fastballtheband.com. One of the things I was going to say was when you were asking how they view themselves or what they are, to me, you're like one of the great American rock bands, both on record and live, like Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers and like Cheap Trick and like that. Like you,
Thank you very much.
Is something that I think if someone hasn't seen you and just knows your music should go see it because it's fucking great.
We're really good live.
We're eager
to show it too.
Yeah.
We're not hiding under a rock.
How about Roland, any last thoughts?
Nothing at all. I'm just looking forward to the official release of this record. I really like what I hear.
Me too. Congratulations, dude.